Good morning, Oregon. I'm Finn J.D. John, FJ at offbeatoregon.com, and this is the Daily Offbeat Oregon History Podcast. Today, for your listening pleasure, we have an archive show, first published as a newspaper column and podcast episode sometime in the last 10 years. Thanks for listening, and I hope you enjoy it. This story was first published on December 28th of 2019 under the headline, Riverboats on Willamette Towed Barns and Fetched Fish. Here we go. The Willamette River was running high and wild on the morning of February 5th, 1890, as Alden and Arthur Graham set out from Oregon City in their sternwheel riverboat for the daily run to Portland. They arrived in Portland in what must have been record time if anyone had been keeping track, dodging logs and small floating buildings along the way, and promptly canceled the return trip. It was just too dangerous to even try charging into the teeth of all the fast-moving debris. But after they arrived, they learned that theirs was the only riverboat between Willamette Falls and the Portland bridges, and there were some things floating down the river that could potentially damage or even destroy those bridges. So back out into the torrent they went to the rescue.
Our first job was to meet two warehouses of furniture owned by I.F. Powers that had gone adrift upstream, Alden recalls in his unpublished memoir. The first one we missed, and it crashed into the Morrison Bridge, but the second we caught and towed to safety.
Then it was down to Ross Island to rescue a herd of dairy cows that were about to be swept away by the rising waters. The brothers finished the night with a moonlit run up the river to intercept a barn which had floated off its moorings and was on its way to the bridges. They found it securely jammed up on the banks near Ross Island, so they left it alone and called it a night.
It had taken us just over an hour to get that far upstream, but less than half that time to return, Alden writes, drifting stern first and taking no chances on fouling our wheel or rudder and becoming a casualty ourselves, referring, of course, to the paddle wheel.
Well, it wasn't exactly just another day in the life of the owners of a small steamboat line, but it wasn't unexpected either. In fact, during the 1861 flood, at least one riverboat steamed out across the flooded valley floor, going from house to rescue people stuck on the roofs. Throughout the late 1800s, the sternwheel riverboat was the predominant icon of life along the Willamette and Lower Columbia Rivers, as the sidewheel boat was along the Missouri. Alden Graham hadn't had any thoughts of starting a steamboat line when he first arrived in Portland from Nova Scotia. He was the son of a ship captain there, and his brother Arthur had followed in the old man's footsteps, but Alden had decided to seek his fortune in Oregon, and so, in 1879, off he went. In his new home, he tried several lines of work before settling into a position at Lipman & Wolf's dry goods store, and he was rapidly rising through the ranks there when a weekend excursion changed his life.
Two of us rowing club members paddled from Portland to Ilwaco, near the mouth of the Columbia, in our canoes, Alden writes. It took us 3.5 days. We returned to Portland via steamboat, an enjoyable experience which also opened my eyes to the possibilities present in the booming steamboat transportation business. Thereafter, my interest in dry goods waned, and I devoted my spare time to scouting around for a small steamboat operation that we Grahams could handle.
Alden also started writing letters to his father John and his brothers Arthur and Newton, urging them to come west and join him in the venture. Soon, they did. The result, in 1885, was the purchase of a tatty little 100-foot sternwheeler, the Altona, which Brother Arthur, the former ship captain, immediately set about restoring to immaculate and perfect order. The Grahams named their operation the Oregon City Transportation Company, but locals all referred to them as the Yellow Stack Line, because Arthur had painted the smokestack of the Altona bright yellow. The line fit nicely into a little niche between the big freight operations that were then scrapping for the Willamette Valley wheat shipping business above the falls and the even bigger Oregon Railway and Navigation Company, which at the time was battling it out with U.B. Scott for the Columbia River passenger business. They specialized in twice-daily runs from Oregon City to Portland, and they'd chosen wisely. There was literally no competition for that run in 1885. The larger operators considered it too small to put a boat on.
We would stop any place for anything, Alden recalls. A single passenger or a few bags of farm produce, a cloth flag on a stick with a note attached giving the shipper and consignee's name was sufficient to ensure shipment to either Portland or Oregon City. This resulted in goodwill, which carried on through the years and helped us when we did get competition later on. Sometimes they didn't even have to stop the boat to take on cargo. During the salmon run each year, commercial fishermen with boatloads of netted salmon between Portland and Oregon City would hail us and, as we slowed down, would come alongside and toss their salmon aboard for shipment to Portland, Alden writes. These were loose fish, so each shipment had to be separated from others by making cordwood bins, with each bin duly tallied and tagged by the purser as to the number of salmon, shipper, and consignee. Our biggest year for loose salmon was 1889, when we carried 16,874. Time marched on. In 1893, an electric railroad was built, linking Portland and Oregon City, and the competition cut deeply into the Grahams' passenger business. The riverboat ride was scenic and lovely, and the Grahams ran an excellent restaurant on board, but the train ride was much faster. Their fleet having expanded to two boats, they found that they had only enough business for one, so they sent the other boat through the Oregon City locks to battle it out with the freighters on the upper river. They expected a hard fight, but at about the same time, someone discovered hops as a Willamette Valley cash crop, and suddenly there was a huge seasonal demand for transportation of hop pickers to and from the fields. This boom was very timely for the Grahams, who had expected to have to fight for market share with the wheat freighters. Right up through the outbreak of the First World War, the Grahams' fleet of yellow stack riverboats continued to ply the upper Willamette, bringing loads of passengers, hops, and wheat down the river to Oregon City over high waters or low shoals. After 1911 or so, the passenger business dried up as the Oregon Electric Railway extended service all the way to Eugene. But there was always freight to be hauled, and so much of it that they actually had another boat built, the Graham Ona, a 150-foot humdinger that could pack 250 tons and drew just 3 feet of water. But, around the time of the war, the Good Roads initiatives had created a national infrastructure of highways that the riverboats couldn't beat. Heavy motor trucks were less expensive to run than steamboats, and they could pick up a farmer's wheat from his actual barn rather than requiring everything to be hauled to the wharf for shipping. By 1918, the Grahams, recognizing the writing on the wall, shut down their operation and sold off their floating stock. The Graham Ona made her last run from Corvallis to Oregon City for the OCT Company in May 1918, Alden writes. And as I write this in 1941, no other steamboat line has been able to restore the reliable Willamette River service we carried out for the 32 years of our corporate life. I doubt if any ever will. It was the end of the steamboat era. This story was based on the memoirs of A.G. Graham, and that is the only source for it. Well, that's our show for today. Thanks again for listening, and I do hope you enjoyed it. This podcast is part of Offbeat Oregon History, a public history resource for the state we love. Check out our hub page at offbeatoregon.com to explore all the other things we do or to find full citations and visuals that go with today's show. This podcast is covered under a Creative Commons license. For details of that, see offbeatoregon.com/cc. Our theme music is by the Atlas String Band and was written by Carmen Ficarra. Listen and download more at atlasstringband.com. Offbeat Oregon History episodes are uploaded every weekday morning at around 6 a.m., so it'll be a couple of days before you get your next fix. Until then, go out and fill up the rest of the day and the subsequent weekend with good stuff. Bye now. Thank you.